WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keys. Pharmacies, doctors, and families are confused after the CDC vaccine advisory panel did not make recommendations about the COVID vaccine. This is cases are on the rise in some parts of the nation, and there's a new variant out there. CBS News medical contributor and KFF editor, Dr. Celine Gounder, with some advice.
The major change is that your healthcare provider may not recommend the COVID vaccine to you, but if you ask for it and have a conversation with your healthcare provider, in all likelihood, you will be able to get it. And pharmacists at retail pharmacies do count as a healthcare provider, so it does not have to be your regular primary care provider or pediatrician.
Some 100,000 people, many of them young supporters of conservative leader Charlie Kirk, are heading to his memorial service tomorrow. An armed man claiming to be law enforcement was arrested yesterday at the site. Kirk's murder has intensified the deep divide in the nation. CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
Tom Wilson is a former youth pastor from Colorado. He says he's driving a group of about a dozen people to Arizona in his church's van.
When I put it on Facebook, hey, we're going to take a van and anybody wants to go, we'll split the gas. I had people saying, I'll tell you what, we'll pay the gas.
President Trump, Vice President Vance, and other VIPs will also be there. In an assessment obtained by CBS News, law enforcement said they are tracking several threats against those planning to attend the memorial, but emphasized there is no information suggesting a verified or credible plot.
This as protests continue over ABC's removal of talk show host Jimmy Kimmel over his comments about Kirk, but some have concerns. CBS's Christian Benavides.
While some conservatives say Kimmel had it coming, others, such as Texas Senator Ted Cruz, criticized the FCC chair.
That's right out of Goodfellas.
More than half of flights scheduled out of Dallas-Fort Worth and Dallas Love Field were delayed or canceled yesterday. CBS's J.D. Miles.
The FAA halted all departures and arrivals out of DFW and Love Field because of an issue involving telephone equipment. It not only kept passengers from taking off, but also had some diverted to other airports.
Well, it was my first flight alone ever. And I was supposed to have a 2.5-hour flight, and I was on the flight for 7 hours.
But it's worse in Europe as a cyber attack hit several major airports. This man at Heathrow says things are a mess.
No organization, nobody's told us anything whatsoever going on. We've had to literally cherry pick it ourselves and get as much information as we can, which has been little or nothing.
Airports are advising travelers to check their flight status and apologizing to them for the inconvenience. It's just the latest cyber attack. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Here's a dose of reality. Driving under the influence of prescription painkillers is just as illegal and just as deadly as driving drunk. In fact, there are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drugged driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Departments of Health Services, Transportation, and Justice.
Clear plan to get out. Party leaders hope a new offer will spark negotiations. That's about as far as the plan goes. Excuse me, Politico, but who controls the House? Who controls the Senate? Who controls the White House? Who controls the Supreme Court? I'm sorry, I didn't realize Democrats controlled anything. But yet, here it is, bold lines. Democrats, they're barreling towards a shutdown. Yeah, how dare they ask to maybe fund health care? How dare they? How dare they ask to be part of the negotiations? How dare they? And here we go. More power grabs. Trump, our unitary executive, engineering another huge power grab. This time hijacking TikTok, of which you know I'm not a huge fan of the Chinese app. But the reality is millions of young people use it. It's a direct connection into the brains of young America. And Trump is basically going to hand it over to the wealthiest donors and his closest cronies. Evidently, the latest deal TikTok is going to spin off to an American version, 80% American, 20% Chinese. But going to have one government person, of course, a crony, and then three of Trump's closest donors, Larry Ellison, this Mark Andreessen, and the Silver Lake, all with deep ties to Trump's own business empire and the political machine that is Trump. And understand, this isn't about national security or protecting our children, because Trump doesn't care about any of that. It's about weaponizing government. It's about weaponizing power and control and ensuring that they have the levers of power to control what you see, hear, and read. Whatever's being fed to your children, you know, is going to be Trump propaganda. And look, he openly admits in 2024 that TikTok helped him win the election. And now he's rigging the system so this powerful app and its algorithm is going to push Trump propaganda, just like it's done with Chinese propaganda. And if you think Beijing controlling TikTok was a problem, wait. Wait till Trump and his billionaire cronies. Wait till the fascists get a hold of it. The communists had it. Now the fascists are going to get it. This deal is going to even further threaten to silence independent voices. And, of course, continue to spread lies, just the right ones, to keep our unitary executive slash dictator in power. This, my friends, is a direct attack on democracy, on information freedom, and anyone who dares to oppose this regime. It's a shakedown of media and of we the people. And what you're seeing is Trump, again, tightening control over social media, which, honestly, one of the last steps in the authoritarian takeover. And as I said, look, you know, while the Chinese controlling TikTok does have legitimate national security concerns for me, Trump's taking this over may be worse. It may be the end of free speech and, well, the kind of government-controlled speech that we're pointing at China for. Because, look, China's government, yeah, they manipulate content and spread propaganda, yeah. But at least you go, that's a foreign threat. Maybe we can somewhat check it because it is a foreign threat. But with Trump having his orange hands all over this and the wealthy crone system that's around him, they're going to have every incentive to use TikTok's powerful algorithm to basically just drown out any opposition. It's going to promote its propaganda, and it's going to silence people like me and you and everyone else. This isn't just about data. It's about weaponizing social media. This is what they're doing. They are in a full assault on anything that they don't agree with. Because guess what? Evidently, Antifa is now a terrorist organization. And the thing is I didn't even know Antifa was an organization. I didn't realize that you could get an Antifa card. Never mind the fact that U.S. law doesn't allow for the declaration of domestic organizations as terrorists. Never mind that. It doesn't exist. It stands for anti-fascist, which I guess if in your mind you're a fascist, you would be against the people who are against fascists. Kind of makes sense why you would want to continue that lie. But understand, this is where they're going. Now, the punchline in all of this, and this is the scary part, because they don't care whether there's actual cards, because if there was an Antifa card, I'd get one. What Trump did say that was most frightening is, I will also be strongly recommending that those funding Antifa be thoroughly investigated in accordance with the highest legal standards and practices. This means anyone giving to any Democrat ever. This means giving to anyone they don't agree with ever. This is going to give them the ability. And as I've been saying, look, they're going to do all the things that conservatives believed Barack Obama was doing. It's going to give them license to actually do it. So all of the talk of weaponizing the IRS, they're going to do. all of the talk of weaponizing, you know, attacking ideological groups, they are going to do, because he's telling you, he's telling the truth. I'm coming for anyone. This is a frightening moment. And he even got, you know, Barack Obama in this moment, rearing his head finally. I slammed ABC for going after Jimmy Kimmel. And my first thought was, gee, Barack, wear those comfortable shoes. Because, you know, a great place for you would be out in the streets, you know, rallying folks. But as Obama said, after years of complaining about cancel culture, the current administration has taken it to a new and dangerous level by routinely threatening regulatory action against media companies unless they muzzle or fire reporters and commentators it doesn't like. Obama added, this is precisely the kind of government coercion that the First Amendment was designed to prevent. And media companies need to start standing up rather than capitulating to it. Oh no, they're in on it. They see this as an opportunity to consolidate more, to have more power, more control. They don't want those pesky voices. They just want the money. So find those comfortable shoes, Barack. We need someone to lead in the streets, because that's where this has to go. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, lots of stuff to talk about the Jimmy Kimmel situation. And what's interesting is not a lot of celebrating with my Red Hat crowd, because I think they're starting to wake up to the reality that, yeah, they're first they're going to come for the Jimmy Kimmels of the world, and then anyone who disagrees. And that means some right-wingers, too. If you're the fake news folks over on that side of the aisle, Trump's MO, you can never be loyal enough. So when does he start going after them? And this is an interesting moment. Interesting moment in my view that every reporter in this country, every news person in this country, locking arms, joining a union, which is why I've asked my good friend John Schloss to come share some thoughts. He's the president of the News Guild, CWA, newsguild.org, their website. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Rick.
So what do you make of this Kimmel situation? What do you make of this, them indefinitely preempting him, firing him, suspending, whatever it is, he ain't on the air.
Yeah, there's a lot to actually digest in the whole situation. But I think on its basic level, what Jimmy Kimmel said was really not that outlandish, but it was something that was quickly picked up by the FCC chairman, Brendan Carr. And he quickly spoke out and called on local stations to preempt the Jimmy Kimmel show if they were an ABC station, to actually not run and air Jimmy Kimmel show. And then almost immediately we saw Nexstar, which owns many ABC news stations across the country, come out and say that they were going to in fact do that. They were gonna preempt the show. That actually put pressure on ABC News. Quickly around the same time, Sinclair Media, which owns a ton of stations, also said that they were going to preempt the show and came out with the even more aggressive statement last night, actually calling on Jimmy Kimmel to pay Turning Point USA and apologize for what he said. But with Nexstar, which owns many of these local stations, it was also an effort to kind of grease the wheels, being very much pay for play at the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. Because any time that a radio or TV station is sold in this country, it has to be approved by the FCC. And the FCC is currently about to look at Nexstar's attempted effort to buy Tegna, which owns about 64 different stations across the U.S. So it all feels very pay to play. All feels a bit ridiculous. And it's also just a complete direct assault on freedom of speech, right? The president and the FCC should not be trying to police speech. It feels very much like the kind of, it is exactly what the president railed against when he was running for office, being censored from social media companies, feeling like he was cut out. Like, it's not the state's place to actually censor media. We have a First Amendment that protects a freedom of speech and a freedom of the press.
Now, you said that what Kimmel said wasn't all that bad, and it really wasn't. And I'm going to read it. He said, we hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang, desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it. I don't know what's objectable. I'm sorry. I have said much, much, much worse. Much worse. And
we just had a Fox News anchor on TV call for the killing of homeless people.
Yeah, like, that's just homeless people.
I mean, it's completely bonkers, right? Yeah, I think it's pretty ridiculous. We also had one of our members, a columnist at the Washington Post, Karen Atia. She was also fired by the Post for some social media posts that she made, talking about this violence, this culture of violence that exists. And so we're actively defending her. We put out a statement defending her. We're actively defending her in the grievance and arbitration procedures. And we'll take the Washington Post to the full extent to protect Karen. But it's this weird sort of disgusting cancel culture and too many publishers and news outlets bending the knee. I mean, you can go back all the way to November and October when you had the Washington Post and the LA Times pull endorsements that they had already written, pre-written endorsements after multiple edits and rounds and conversations for Kamala Harris. They pulled those to start currying favor with the Donald Trump administration, which hadn't even come in. And that was Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, and that was Patrick Soon-Shiong, who owns the Los Angeles Times. Both have significant business interests in front of the federal government.
No, and to go back to what you'd said about this Nexstar deal, they are pursuing this massive merger, and they do need the FCC. And you know, it's kind of Nixonian in what Brendan Carr and the Trump administration did by using that kind of trial balloon to get corporate America to do what they wanted them to do. Do you think we're going to see much more of this, especially as corporate America sees an opportunity to monopolize, name the industry, especially media?
Yeah, no, we absolutely are, and we will. I mean, another example is back in April, Nexstar owns one newspaper. It's called The Hill, which is based here in Washington, D.C., and they cover a lot of politics in Washington, D.C. They fired a journalist to actually avoid a lawsuit by Trump over Truth Social. They did that to get out of a lawsuit where he sued multiple different institutions and news outlets over claims of the traffic going to Truth Social. And it turns out that indeed they did that to curry favor. So we're going to see it again and again. And what you said at the start is the thing that we have to remember. We can't rely on billionaires or corporations to protect us. It's going to mean working people standing up and fighting for our very rights, fighting for freedom of speech, fighting for a free press, and requiring those workers, especially journalists, to stand together. That was one of the things that we did. We filed a lawsuit a couple of months ago against the Trump administration. And DHS and Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, over their targeting and attacks on journalists, because when there were a bunch of protests instigated by the Trump administration in Southern California, in Los Angeles, when they were having ICE agents and DHS agents and HSI agents going out into the street, they were grabbing people, and people started protesting. Well, journalists show up to cover protests. That's just kind of what we do as a job. We got to witness what's happening in our communities. And DHS agents turned their guns and fired rubber bullets at the heads of journalists, including our members in Southern California. So we filed a lawsuit. We actually won an injunction a week ago against the federal government saying, you know, you can't actually violate the First Amendment. You can't actually shoot people for covering protests, and you can't shoot peaceful protests for also exercising their right under the First Amendment.
And you wonder why the Trump administration's going full tilt boogie after unions, why they're trying to make unions illegal. You wonder why.
Yeah, I mean, they want to silence our voice. They want to silence our collection, right? Because we're the only folks who are actually standing up and fighting. And again, it's a union is in essence only just workers standing up with each other to protect each other. So it could be you making sure that you're like, you know, supporting a colleague. Even if you don't have a union in place, you're supporting a colleague who's being mistreated at work. That's in essence what a union is. You build that, you expand that. You know, the state of AFGE, the fact that they've canceled so many contracts, especially of like TSA agents, like canceling the contracts, collective bargaining agreements for TSA agents. I mean, that impacts the security of our flights all across the country. Going after also related to this is they've gone after the government programs of Radio Free Asia, which have been a bipartisan funding thing, really actually implemented and really supported by the Republican Party. But also Voice of America to broadcast into countries with repressive regimes, right? This was an effort to combat communism. They shut those down with Carrie Lake being appointed as the de facto leader of the U.S. Agency for Global Media. They wanted to silence journalists in that way too. And then Carrie Lake went to go get the free rights to broadcast OAN on government access channels into these repressive regimes. It's completely ridiculous. And we've lost about 130 members at Radio Free Asia who broadcast stories of the Dalai Lama into Tibet, broadcast stories into North Korea, using shortwave radio into places like that. It's just been, it's an all-out attack on the First Amendment because, you know, there's a saying, first they came for the journalists, and then we don't know what happened next.
We don't know, exactly. But what do you say to but the FCC chairman basically saying, look, the FCC's walked away from their obligation to enforce the public interest. We're just doing what the law is saying that we should be doing because, you know, past administrations haven't done it. We're just cleaning up the airwaves. I think his quote was, we're going to enforce the public interest obligation. He says, if there are broadcasters out there who don't like it, they can turn in their license. What do you say to that?
I mean, this is state censorship from the federal government, right? The idea that broadcast is actually supposed to be very locally based, right? Because these are stations that operate in communities and are in theory mostly broadcasting over antenna. Of course, people have different subscriptions or they're watching it on stream TV. But the federal government should not be walking into the state of Wyoming and telling them what they should or shouldn't be broadcasting. It's really up for the people. That's the essence of freedom of speech and freedom of the press. So it's complete overreach by the FCC, by Brendan Carr, to try and mandate the broadcast. I mean, this is very similar to the attacks on PBS and NPR. I mean, we've got just 12 days, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is shutting down, denying news, local news coverage to many folks, mostly in red areas that don't have the funding necessary to actually support it from subscription. So we're talking about very red parts of America, like Alaska, where public media is essential. And you've got the FCC also opening investigations into NPR and PBS. It's just completely, it's state-sponsored censorship.
It seems like, you know, the people who said that the Biden administration was weaponizing government and weaponizing these agencies while they weren't, they're actually doing, and I said this the other day, they're actually doing everything that my Red Hat friends have imagined that Obama did. They're actually living out the fantasy of everything that Obama did. Only now they're doing it to the right people. And that seems to be the justification for some. I'm curious if you have a thought on that.
Yeah, I mean, we're already seeing, even on the right, people come out and criticize the Trump administration for going too far, for Pam Bondi saying that they were going to start to police hate speech because, you know, hate speech is not something that you can actually police, right? You know, there's freedom of speech. And if you have someone who says something that you don't like, they still have a right to do it as long as they're not, like, you know, causing extreme violence because of it. So it's really just disturbed at the end of the day, because it's duplicitous. It's hypocritical. I mean, Trump ran on a campaign to promote free speech. I mean, he was censored by the social media companies, felt like he was censored himself. And now he's turning around and actively, like, censoring publications, suing the New York Times for $15 billion, suing the Wall Street Journal for publishing or, you know, talking about a story about a letter in the Jeffrey Epstein book, which we now have seen because it's been released through subpoenas, through House action in U.S. Congress.
Yeah. But you said a second ago that he was censored. Was he actually? Because I didn't see that story that he was censored.
Well, he was, you know, he claimed, you know, in 2020, at the end of his term, when he was kicked off of Facebook and Twitter, that he was being censored by these companies, right?
Because he violated their terms of service. Those are private companies doing private things. This wasn't government forcing them to do it, as I understand. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. Those were private companies making their own decisions. They had these, you know, protections and safeties in place. So this is actually more expansive from that view, right? Private companies should be able to do what they thought. That's what the Republican Party has been arguing, being able to control what speech is out there. But it's really questionable in this space, especially when you get to the FCC, which is the group, again, that decides whether or not companies can merge. They should not be putting pressure on stations to cancel programming.
Right. No, I'm with you. But here's my problem, and this is where I kind of want to end this. In this area, I think Bill Clinton made a huge mistake in 96 with the telecom bill that allowed more monopolization of media outlets. I think it's gotten worse and worse over the last couple of decades. I think this is only going to make it much worse because what did I read? Like 90% of everything that we see here and read is owned like by a handful of maybe 5-6 corporations. That even the outlets we think are local are still owned by some big conglomerate. And this is only getting worse. Shouldn't we be pushing to break some of this stuff up, to demonopolize our media so that there are more voices instead of less? Because look, I'm a free speech guy. I'm a liberal who believes in we should be talking to each other. Shouldn't there be more voices, not less? Shouldn't we be fighting for more opportunities to go back and forth and have dialogue instead of a government working every bit as hard to silence us and to censor us?
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, this is what you see when you have capitalists and greed basically run without any rules or any controls. You have billionaires buying up multiple different news outlets, whether they're broadcasters or their newspapers. I mean, of course, in the news space, we have hedge funds that have been buying up newspapers across the country, cutting the staff, taking all the profits out, and then turning around and doing other things like buying up property, like buying up Greyhound stations in Chicago, and actively converting them and flipping them into condo buildings and denying people having a place, an inside space to wait for the next bus exchange. It's an effort to actually buy up and then censor and slow down. And you see with like Sinclair, another broadcaster, will oftentimes like actually do uniform reporting where it will push out the same story for everyone to read. It's really disappointing. And it's why I think a lot of reporters have to make a stand. They have to stand up. They have to refuse to do that work. We have an ethical duty to be accountable and act independently. And now is the time more than ever to do that and speak up and stand together to actively fight these efforts to control things, whether it's from a monopolistic standpoint and a corporation standpoint, or it's the federal government trying to make changes.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up Sinclair because, you know, have you ever seen that mock-up? I forget the group that did it, but they did a mock-up of like 50, like 30, 40, maybe even 50 local newscasts where they're all reading the exact same thing. All different faces, all different voices, you know, all different areas, but all the exact same lines. I can't think of anything more fascistic than that. When you're talking about government and corporations coming together, same propaganda, that's kind of what fascism is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not free speech or independent thought. Like it's actively trying to coordinate. And I mean, you have corporations who are doing this to have massive control over markets. And you know, back to your main point, your previous point, I mean, there are rules in place at the FCC to prevent monopoly control of certain number of stations. And the current FCC is actually trying to get rid of those rules. So, you know, what's happened here with Nexstar coming out quickly saying that they would cancel the Jimmy Kimmel show and preempt the production, the broadcast of it. They are doing that to curry favor so that they can buy and gobble up even more stations and actually expand beyond the cap that is in place to prevent monopolies from taking control and from news being controlled by one entity, whether it's a corrupt government or it's a corrupt corporation.
Again, I go back to what I said a moment ago. Every reporter, every newscaster, everyone in media should be immediately linking arms, joining unions, standing together, joining in solidarity, going to newsguild.org, finding John Schlois and the News Guild folks there, and coming together, because it's going to be a long fight. John, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work, and I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
We'll keep doing it, Rick. I mean, our job is to seek truth and report it, and that's what we're going to do.
There you go. Thanks so much, John. Again, newsguild.org if you want to take a look at the work that they do, and maybe find your voice. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 98.9 WXCO.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and thunderstorms today. Highs in the upper 60s. Lows in the upper 50s tonight with scattered storms. And a few showers and thunderstorms on Sunday with a high near 72. 55 Sunday night. 72 again on Monday with an afternoon storm possible.
Right now, it's 62.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local Civic Media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay. Just download our free Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. For complete rules, go to civicmedia.us.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
On June the 7th of 2025, I was shot by the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, and I'm not alone. Let me explain. As President Trump's mass deportation program unfolds, federal and local officers here in Los Angeles are using excessive and violent force against journalists, legal observers, and protesters alike. I've covered protests around the world for more than three decades, and the law enforcement violence at anti-ICE protests in Los Angeles are as bad as some conflict zones I've seen. When DHS Secretary Kristi Noem said videotaping ICE is an act of violence, all of our rights are at risk. On June the 7th, while covering an ICE raid, I was shot by the Sheriff's Department with a less lethal projectile. It exploded and embedded in my right thigh. I was clearly identified as press. ER doctors later found the plastic casing embedded in the wound, which they removed during emergency surgery. Over 2 months later, while I was covering a protest outside the Federal Detention Center here in downtown Los Angeles on August the 8th, my first time out since my injury, LAPD officer struck me across the face with a baton, splitting my chin open.
A democracy depends on an informed public, and you don't have an informed public without a free press. So what I'm concerned about is our democracy itself.
On September the 10th, Judge Hernan Vera issued sweeping preliminary injunctions barring DHS agents and the Los Angeles Police Department from dispersing, threatening, or assaulting journalists. If DHS can violently attack journalists and citizen observers without consequences, none of us are safe anywhere in the country.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So that video from the folks over at the Center for Media and Democracy, it's the shorter version, which we'll get the longer version out on social media, but just as appalling as the full-length one, and it goes to show the lengths at which the Trump administration's willing to go to stop you and me from knowing what they are doing. We've all seen the video of reporters being shot deliberately with quote-unquote non-lethal rounds. How, you may ask? Because there's some people brave enough to stand and report what's going on in our name in this moment. And here to share some thoughts on all of this and what's going on, I've asked Matthew Cunningham Cook to come share some thoughts. He's a reporter over at the Center for Media and Democracy. You can check out their website as exposedbycmd.org. Matthew, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me, Rick. And I just wanted to say, huge longtime fan of the show, and so impressed with the work that you've been able to accomplish over
I appreciate that. But you know, the reality is that right now, I'm sure you see this as much as anyone, there is an all-out frontal assault on anyone who is telling truths, looking at this administration and what they're doing. And I look at this video you guys just put out that pretty much goes through and shows the recent violence and the assaults on journalists and observers at the anti-ICE protests there in Los Angeles. So the question I have is, what patterns are you seeing as these things are happening? And I guess, who's responsible?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously a long history of this, you know, Trump describing the press as the enemy of the people. But more recently, Kristi Noem, the Secretary of Homeland Security, has described videotaping ICE agents as violence. And that was a story that we reported out recently. And so I think that this is an extremely kind of dangerous time for the First Amendment in the U.S., where this administration has made very clear that from Jimmy Kimmel on down, that any criticism will attract regulatory scrutiny, will attract aggressive behavior and verbiage from the administration. But when it comes to reporting on protests, you know, in particular protests against ICE, violence. And so, yeah, we've seen a pattern of reporters hit with less lethal munitions. In the video, we interviewed Nick Stern, who said, you know, he's reported from war zones all over the world. And it's Los Angeles under Trump where that has been the most dangerous and kind of the most aggressive response from law enforcement.
Are you surprised by any of this? Because look, I mean, you know, for all the people who are going to be, Rick, I didn't think it was going to be this bad. I'm going, how could you not? It's all we talked about in 2024. They are doing, and to Trump's credit, I got to be honest, I got to give him credit. They're doing everything that they said they were going to do, everything they laid out in Project 2025. When he goes to his rallies and says he hates protesters and he's ready to go after them, this kind of goes right into this. So, you know, to follow up on your comment about Kristi Noem, you know, are we surprised that anything that they disagree with is somehow violent? Are we surprised that the people who talk about free speech are the ones censoring?
No, I don't think that we should be surprised. I think that, you know, the Republican Party has always had a glass jaw. I think there was crackdowns on the press under Bush. There were crackdowns on the press under Reagan. Obviously, there were crackdowns on the press under Nixon. And I think it's kind of really a testament to how much the mainstream kind of corporate media has failed to report on kind of how consistent the Republican Party's attacks on a free press have been, both historically, but then more recently, how kind of Trump represents a qualitative leap forward in the attacks on the First Amendment and the free press. And that's why it's so important that we have outlets like yours, outlets like CMD, that are kind of willing to really kind of dig in and say, this is a qualitative leap forward when it comes to attacks on the free press and attacks on journalists.
But let me ask you this, because, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions from friends, from family, from people who care about me going, you know, seeing what's going on. And I'm sure you're getting this as a reporter as well. Are you concerned that eventually, you know, first they came for Colbert, then they came for Kimmel. They go down the list. Eventually they're going to come for Matthew Cunningham Cook. Eventually they're going to come for Rick Smith. Does that concern you?
Well, I will say I travel outside the U.S. relatively frequently. And one of the more recent times that I came back, they asked, CBP asked kind of a series of relatively personal questions. And it was right after I had published a report in Rolling Stone kind of investigating, you know, the top Musk henchmen. And so I think that, yeah, there's very kind of real risks kind of here for reporters. But that's, you know, I think one thing that we should learn from kind of other authoritarian kind of experiments is you can't quit when it's only a little bit bad. You know, that's kind of when it's a little bit bad is when you have to kind of triple down and start kind of raising your voice and kind of being more aggressive with your reporting. And so I think that's what I really hope kind of we have a report coming out shortly about kind of how many mainstream journalists have embedded with ICE to do ride-alongs with ICE. And it's like my fiercest message to reporters and corporate outlets is don't do that at kind of this moment in time. You shouldn't do it at any moment in time, but kind of with what we're seeing, we really can't kind of give the administration any quarter. We have to maintain our independence. We have to be aggressive in reporting on the administration. Fair, but aggressive.
But understand, if you're embedded with them, they're going to protect you, and they may not shoot you. So to be honest, you know, there's some radical self-interest in there. I'm sure some reporters are going, I'd rather be on the safety side of this than, you know, doing that actual journalism stuff that you do.
I think that's very true. And I think it's also just, you know, people don't want to admit to themselves that this administration is qualitatively different. I think that's very hard from everybody from the New York Times on down to admit that this is not kind of what we've seen in the past. And it requires a really significant recalibration if we're going to kind of report the news the way that it should be reported going forward.
Do you have any faith in the federal judiciary? I know that a federal judge issued a preliminary injunction against DHS and the LAPD to stop assaulting journalists there. Do you think there's going to be any impact from legal action? Or do you think this is just going to have to be, as I do, enough people getting out in the street, enough people with eyes and cameras and everything on this, that you can't silence everyone?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the judge was responding to kind of the public response. But I think that, you know, I think that it has to require kind of more nonviolent kind of observation of what is going on if we're going to kind of be able to have a free press going forward. And yeah, and I think it's again, and most importantly of all is journalists organizing in corporate media outlets. I mean, every single broadcaster at Sinclair needs to join SAG-AFTRA yesterday. I'll just say that, you know, and kind of needs to kind of speak out about needs to be able to have the protections on the job to be able to speak out about, to be able to tell the truth about what's actually happening.
Because the reality is, and I maybe you'll come along with me, it's going to get a lot worse.
I think that the administration is testing its allies. It's testing Republicans in Congress. How it's testing Susan Collins, how far are you willing to go kind of in supporting this administration? And I think that what we've seen so far is there isn't really a limit.
There's no bottom here. Because here's the thing that bothers me. You know, what they did in L.A., as you said, kind of that dipping the toe in the water, it's going to escalate. You know, they're talking in Chicago. They're talking about major cities across the U.S. now going after the people who are going to be paying attention and reporting on them. It seems like they're doing what basically every authoritarian administration has ever done in history, which is, you know, heavy crackdowns and heavy crackdowns on media.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's a very consistent playbook that I think is happening here where, you know, the administration in charge sees an opportunity and runs with it. And it's unfortunate, but it's where we are right now for sure.
So what role do you see for independent media? I mean, obviously the Center for Media and Democracy has been around for a very long time. In fact, I remember we shared an office for a bit with you guys when Scott Walker was, you know, doing what he was doing in Wisconsin back in 2011. And, you know, I remember at that time, you know, the need to keep hammering on the fact that these are authoritarians. These are people who the rule of law doesn't matter to them. They're going to steamroll people. So what do you see for, independent media? Because it looks like the legacy media has already, you know, raised the white flag. What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really hopeful that kind of more people will be kind of, you know, I mean, eight years ago, there was kind of a whole thing of, you know, now's the time to subscribe to the New York Times, to the Washington Post. And I really hope that kind of more people are like, no, now is the time to subscribe to the American Prospect, subscribe to Wired, subscribe to Rolling Stone, subscribe to outlets that are actually kind of telling the truth about what's going on. That's what I'm cautiously optimistic, supporting, listening to you, you know, supporting CMD. That's what I really hope is kind of what a lot of, you know, mainstream kind of liberal Americans are kind of starting to realize, that, you know, this is a qualitatively different era than 8 years ago. And kind of if the mainstream media outlets were resisting 8 years ago, which is debatable, they certainly aren't now.
No, the reality is they certainly are not now. The white flag has been raised because they know this administration will do anything, because there are no guardrails. The courts aren't going to save them. And this is where I've had a lot of people come to me and go, this is where citizen journalism is so important, having so many people who are paying attention, why it's important. Because, look, I look at what the administration is trying to do is reenact some kind of a censored fairness doctrine. It's only fair if they say it, and censoring everyone else. So I do see, you know, it's much like the gun debate. I've told my right-wing gun nut friends, it's never going to come from the left or from Democrats. Gun control and gun grabbing is going to come from the right and from fascists, because they don't want you having guns either. This is kind of in the same realm for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. You know, you have the NRA silent on this push to take away Second Amendment rights from every trans American. Which is, you know, again, I mean, I think you and I could have seen that coming, but a lot of people couldn't have seen that coming, that this is the direction this rhetoric is going to. You know, it's going to be a full-scale assault on the Bill of Rights, and they're not going to have any exception, because they see themselves as already having kind of the tools at their disposal to be able to accomplish what they want to accomplish. I would just add, you know, I think citizen journalism is extremely important. Filming ICE, filming DHS, filming police cooperating with ICE and DHS. And then I think the most exciting thing that I think is happening right now is these grand juries refusing to turn down indictments. So, you know, historically they said, oh, grand juries will indict a ham sandwich. And now grand juries are refusing to indict people on these ridiculous trumped up charges. So that I think is, you know, ordinary citizens stepping into the role that kind of the New York Times or the Washington Post should be doing. So
no, there's a lot here. There's a lot to be worried about. Last question I've got for you, because the reality is may you live in interesting times, these most certainly interesting times. What should people be paying attention to? What are you looking for as this administration moves to silence more and more voices?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we're going to be tracking more concretely in relation to this is kind of what corporations are profiting off of this administration's agenda. So we've already been highlighting Geo Group, CoreCivic, kind of folks like that. Koch Industries has been a long kind of focus of our organization. So I think that's kind of the key next step is, you know, there's been great work done around Tesla. Who are the corporate backers?
Follow the money. Yeah, follow the money. And the money's going right into Trump's pocket. Exactly. He himself said in his lawsuit, he's worth $100 billion. His brands, and I'm going, I don't know which orifice you're pulling that out of or which Saudi bank you're getting it from, but that's not what you came into office with. And it sure doesn't play into my Red Hat friends going, he went bankrupt for us. But Matthew, I appreciate the time. Cool. Keep up the great work. I hope folks will check out exposedbycmd.org. Folks over at the Center for Media and Democracy. Matthew, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Rick. Appreciate your time.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you concerned like I am? Are you concerned that the fascists are coming? The authoritarians are coming? I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1977. That was the day that is remembered in Youngstown, Ohio as Black Monday. The Youngstown Sheet and Tube Company announced plans to close its doors, laying off more than 4,000 workers. Youngstown was a steel town. During the first half of the 20th century, plants were booming. Youngstown was also a union town, a stronghold for the United Steelworkers by the 1940s. But by the 1970s, the once booming steel industry was going bust in Youngstown. More and more jobs moved overseas and to states with less union protections. Black Monday began a devastating series of plant closings. 2 years later, Briar Hill Mill closed, followed in 1980 by U.S. Steel. In 1985, it was Republic Steel's turn. By the early 1990s, the steel industry, which had once employed 40,000 people, only had 1,000 workers left in Youngstown. William Lawson, the executive director of the Mahoning Valley Historical Society, recalled the impact of the closings, saying, quote, "Over the course of my high school career, many boys and girls I had known in grade school left. Some in the middle of school years, most during the summers, as their parents accepted transfers to work in other plants around the country or lost their jobs and went out in search of employment elsewhere." In 1997, the Jeanette furnace at the shuttered Briar Hill plant was dynamited, despite preservationists' efforts to save it. Bringing down the Sweet Jenny furnace became symbol of Youngstown's economic ruin, memorialized in this Bruce Springsteen song.
Here in Youngstown.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Sweet Jenny, I'm sinking down here, darling, in Youngstown.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I gotta tell you, I give Matthew and, well, all journalists in this moment absolute credit and applause for standing up, doing your job, and informing us. Because as John Schloy said in the first half of the program, you know, first they came for the journalists, and, well, we don't know what else happened because there was no one. There was no one to tell us. There was no one to document. There was no one to keep track. That's a problem. And the thing that's most concerning is this administration is going full tilt boogie into assaulting a messaging media that they don't like, while rewarding what they want, the propaganda machine. And it's interesting because, you know, he brought up, you know, they did this back during the Bush years. And in fact, if you remember the Bush years, they were holding their own fake press conferences. They had staffers dressed up like reporters asking questions. They were really bad at it. But at least they tried to play within the boundaries of, we're going to play the game, but we know it's a game and we're going to abuse it. These folks are like, all gloves off. There are no rules in our game. And this is the part that's really concerning, because I know a lot of my left friends. I know a lot of right friends who aren't as crazy as some. They think that the boundaries are in place. They think that the guardrails are still there, that we can't go off the fascistic, authoritarian dictator cliff. And I would argue we're already down. It's just, how far down are we going to get? The Department of War? And now we're going to use the Department of War and the Pentagon and Charlie Kirk's death to get young people to join the military? Going to have a national call to service with possible slogans like, Charlie has awakened a generation of warriors. What? I guess it's true. Never let a good crisis go to waste. Because Charlie Kirk's murder is the 9/11 kind of moment that they wanted, is the Pearl Harbor kind of moment, because it gives them license to do whatever they want and use Charlie Kirk however they want. And justify whatever it is that their little heart desires. Because They're already laying the table. You say anything, you're going to get canceled. You say anything, you're going to lose your job. You say anything, bad things will happen. Toe the line. Get in line. Get behind. Hero. Or bad things happen. We're in a really scary moment. All in the name of free speech. Remember that. Remember, this is the guy, Donald Trump, who told us we now have free speech. He gave it to us. He was the guy against cancel culture. And yet here we are, canceled. Where does it end, and are you okay with what you're saying? I mean, that's the reality. And do you think it's good for the military to use the tragedy to get the kind of people who this would affect, that this would bring to a military? I'm going to have to start asking some of my military friends if that's what we want. Because understand, this government, this is not a government of, for, and by we the people. These are the cronies. These are the billionaires. These are the power mongers. And I was just looking at this new Annenberg poll that has said that public confidence in our our health agencies has plummeted. I mean, nosedive. And the number that they gave was something like 39% of people have confidence in RFK Jr. And his organization giving us trustworthy information. 39%. And it got me to thinking, going, well, I've always said, you know, about 30-35% MAGA world. And I've always said, you know, sadly, about 40% of us are stupid. Here you go. This kind of falls into that world. And how can you not look at this administration and question everything that they're doing? But here's the thing. Don't question too loudly. You might get canceled. You might get fired from your job. You might get audited. And this is the weird world in which we're in. Because remember, these were the people who were talking about freedom. I remember all during the 2024 campaign, my Red Hat Brigade. And yes, I think you do need to talk to Red Hats. I do think you need to talk to people. And I will never back down from that. But they were all saying, you know, the government's censoring us. The government's going to put forth social credit scores. The government's going to censor us. The government's watching us. All this stuff. And I remember saying to them, you do understand that all of the stuff that you talk about will be brought to us by Donald Trump and a right wing who only wants power. Their ideas aren't popular. None of their ideas are popular with the American people. None of the policies that they've moved on are making American lives better. None of it. So what do they have to do? Well, they have to divide us, keep us pitted against each other. And they have to control what we see, hear, and read, which is why they're going after trying to destroy education. An educated populace doesn't fall for this kind of nonsense. And the more we allow them to get away with this, the worse it's going to be for all of us. So am I surprised 39% think RFK Jr. is doing a good job? Not even a little bit. The same 39% that think Donald Trump's doing a good job. These are the loyalists. These are the people who can write their favorite executive order. These are the people who will pass Donald Trump's patronage test. These are the people who not only drank the Kool-Aid, they shot it into their veins along with the Clorox. I know. You can't say that, Rick. It'll make our dear leader unhappy. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. How long do you wait? How far does it have to go? You miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. Negotiations to avoid a government shutdown on October 1st are not going well on Capitol Hill. A stopgap measure to keep it funded through November passed the House but failed to clear the Senate. Political reporter Anthony Adragna on what it might look like and who would be affected.
There are a host of implications here if the government shuts down. Everything from national parks being shut down, people not getting their Social Security, and other benefits in the mail. The impacts are really pretty widespread.
That immigration enforcement crackdown in the Chicago area is causing protests that turned violent yesterday, and demonstrators say they will continue to target a detention center in Broadview, Illinois. ICE denies that officers are using excessive force, but a Chicago alderman claims the agents are trying to provoke activists to justify calling in the National Guard. This person was overcome by tear gas.
Even though